Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, March 20th, which, Tori, I believe is the first day of spring or tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow. So today is the last day of winter.
Okay, so that always changes. Every year it's different, I think. 21st, 22nd.
21st always.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, and what about September? Is it 21st also for the autumn?
I think.
21st.
It's not like the lunar, which is what the Jewish calendar is, which I think is so cool.
Well, the Jewish calendar, no, actually the Muslim calendar is lunar. The Jewish calendar is both solar and lunar, believe it or not.
I don't like know 100% of what that means because it sounded amazing.
I know. They just go based on
sun and moon. Is that what you mean by solar
and
moon?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think that makes me feel like some kind of like wizard type person. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. No, I mean, for sure, you know, but I don't know. I have no clue how they came up with this stuff with the dates and everything. But they
how
did,
about when
you
they
know?
Like add a couple seconds at the end of a year?
Right.
I'm like, who's in charge of that?
Yeah.
The time wizard?
Well, what could you...
I don't understand that at all. Anyway.
The time wizard.
Very strange.
Well, back to work on a Monday. We have a couple of great guests. We'll get to them in
very
just a
excited.
Moment. A lot happening in Washington
yes.
today.
Comey is testifying.
Yes.
If you don't know me, he's testifying probably 2 miles from my house.
Really?
Yeah, I live like in it.
Really?
The swamp. And again, it technically is a real swamp. D.C. is built on the swamp, just so you know. So Comey's testifying and... yeah, he says Trump is under investigation with ties to Russia, and they did not find any ties to the wiretapping. And Trump is off his meds doing he's tweeting. So yeah. It's a very interesting morning, man.
Wow.
You got to scroll, you got to look. You got to do both. So, and Comey's been very, I think he dyed his hair. He looks great.
Yeah.
He looks younger. I hate the guy,
okay.
But I think good try. He's media ready, but, he's saying I can't investigate a lot on people because they're not allowed to tell you if A, they're under investigation or they will be. So a lot of times they're asking to investigate Roger Stone or they're asking about Michael Flynn. And he's like, I can't answer that. And they're like, we're going to take that to mean blah, blah, blah. So
right. It's
getting testy in there, man. It's really good television.
My God, it is good television.
Very good television.
Our country's going down.
Oh, it's
down
terrible.
Too,
it's
man.
Awful. It's going, no.
It's terrible. You know, I can't justify any of the shit that's happening there. It's just too much, man.
Yeah. So I'm
just like, to me, it's just overwhelming, so I'd rather not
totally.
Deal with it.
That's sort of
but
how I feel about...
that's why I
like
to listen to you, because you're able to sift
oh my God, that's
through
nice.
All this stuff.
No, that's so nice. That's how I feel about math. I'm like, it's just overwhelming, and I don't want to deal with it at all. Do you know what I mean? So a woman who is so smart did it very well. She was on the Intelligence Committee, and she was saying, think of it like a... Of course it took a woman to speak like a teacher or a mom. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everyone was like, and you're like, what? And she said, it's like a spider's web, and Putin is the tarantula. She got real specific. about the type of spider, which was also really interesting, and was like, and he keeps bringing people into the web that we find that have already been in there for years. So she said Manafort, Page, Carter, Kushner, Flynn, and now she's like, who will it be next? And I'm like, that's the way you do it. Like, no matter what side you're on, that is a way to tell a story.
That's true.
So, like, she will be the soundbite. You know what I mean? Because everyone's like, oh, spider web, I understand.
Yeah. So. We'll just see how we'll emerge from all this, you know, but hopefully there's some sane people in Washington that can look out for us because,
I don't know. Joe Biden to fly in with a cape and be like, I'm back, sanity's here. Or
you know,
I mean,
if I was like after this election, if I was the president, all I would do is spend the first 100 days
cleaning,
reconciling this, you know, the differences between this.
Oh my God.
This government.
You know what I would do?
He's doing is tearing apart everything.
But that's really what a dictator does is tear everything apart around you. So that everyone trusts only you. Mm-hmm. It's what you say, these are lies, so that you don't trust anyone but the dictator.
Right,
it's just,
it's a
formula. It's not that hard. You've seen it before. But what's interesting is, I think you're right. The next president, whatever it is, whether you're a Republican and you hate what I'm saying or a Democrat, there does need to be some saging of like the White House just to like, You know what I mean? Like, they should bring in a lot of the, right? Like, thank you. Some UN. I would bring in every prime minister, president, right? Ambassadors, and just sage everyone. Because there's some bad fucking feelings.
Bad vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes. Yeah. You know, there's got some powers there, you know?
Mm.
So,
okay,
I'm
well,
hashtag saging.
Yeah. I know. I'd like to see like one good debate about this election from two sides that don't call each other names to really understand what happened.
The problem is this, and I would too, and that's what I was born with. I grew up debating Republican friends. I love a good debate. Right, that's the best part about politics. And what's the problem is you don't find a lot of Trump surrogates that debate fairly within the realm of debates.
Right.
So when I watch MSNBC or I watch Fox just to get the other side, I don't get to see two people that are saying I agree on this fight.
Right.
It's just a lot of screaming and like, well, who says? Remember that clip? Who says? Everyone, all the polls. Well, who says? We don't believe them. Well, that's not a way to debate. You can't have a debate
on
that.
Right,
so usually you see a debate between two people and it's great. But
Right. But what I'm saying is on TV, I'd like to see debates of like groups of conservatives and liberals.
Oh, you mean like normal
people? Not really politicians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I want to see what people are thinking, what they're feeling, you know?
Yeah, just go on Facebook. Just kidding.
Yeah, right? I know. Well, Facebook is not the indication for me.
No, of course not.
It depends on who you surround yourself with.
Oh, yeah.
With,
I mean,
you know?
Facebook is so curated to what you believe.
Exactly.
It's your team being like, rah, go on, you know. But yeah, I think you're right. That would be really fascinating to just get like a town hall and no celebrities, just normal people on both sides talking to each other.
Yeah. I know.
I'm thinking of a pitch idea.
Yeah. Well, listen to
do
what...
Do I have to give you 10% for that idea?
Comey just said that Russia wanted to hurt U.S. and Clinton and help Trump.
Oh, he said this 50 times, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I thought he just said it now.
That's the news, but he said it from the... He has been very open this hearing.
Really?
So it's good to tell... I'm telling you again.
Yeah.
We put it on and we were watching in bed and he was like, yes, they asked. Did Russia want Trump to win? Yes, affirmative.
Now, Comey, was he nominated to his position? How did he get...
Really
there.
Funny. Okay, you want to know something really funny? He's credited with having lost the election for Clinton because 2 weeks before he came out with something about her emails.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's like, bad Comey. So of course, when Trump met Comey on TV, he gave him a kiss on, and it was close to the mouth. I'm not saying if you can all watch it. It was very weird, and he like beckoned him from the other side of the room. And he kept him on because he helped him get the election. And now it's kicking him in his ass.
Yeah.
So
I know a lot of people are eating crow now because of
this. Is that what this saying is? You eat crow or craw?
Craw, no?
Crow?
Craw.
Crow.
Crow?
It's stuck in your craw, but you eat crow.
Oh, okay.
But I don't really understand that at all.
Okay, so why the hell did I say it in the first place?
Because it's a great saying, but I like
it. I know.
I like it. We both don't know what's going on. So, yeah.
Oh, well, don't tune in to learn grammar here. Although you can. We talked about the Oxford
comma.
We
did talk about the Oxford
comma. Yeah, so do tune in for
which would
grammar.
Make a great rap name, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The Oxford comma.
A rap name.
Such a good rap name.
Of all names.
Or a band name or something. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to our guests. I just wanted to bring up, did you know that Honey Nut Cheerios pulled out its mascot, the bee?
Yeah,
right.
There's some honeybee controversy going
right.
on.
Right, yeah, because I guess they're disappearing.
So
they wanted to bring attention to this phenomenon.
Correct.
And
they're trying to help save the bees.
Right. So they're collecting like a lot of money to send free packets of wildflower seeds.
Yeah. So the problem is, so they're doing this campaign, which sounds really great, of saving the bees, where you
right.
can send money and right, and you get a packet of wildflower seeds, just like you said. But people are sprinkling it in places that, like, it's bad for the environment.
Really?
It's like, man, you can't win, man, for the freaking bee. So that's having some controversy.
If you wonder what they call him Buzz, I guess, right?
Yeah, that cool bee.
Yeah.
I kind of had a crush on him for some reason. He was always, like, cool.
You've had crushes on all the weirdest characters.
I know, fictional
characters.
Someone said they had a crush on Kong from Skull Island.
Really?
I was like, I could see that.
Wow.
Very like, Tramp from Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You said that one.
But I think everyone can agree who saw Robin Hood, that one with the fox, the cartoon, the Disney one.
Mm-hmm.
That fox was foxy.
Well,
anyone will agree with me on that.
Foxy fox?
Oh.
Okay. Mm. Well, I'm still going with Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, you look so weird.
All right. Well, let's get to our guests now. We're joined by LA Talk Radio host Ethan Detmeyer and his wife, Laura. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi. Thank you. Privileged to be here. How are you?
Good, we're good, Loda.
Hi, thank you. Privileged to be here. And I want to say,
yes,
I'm really loving your new co-host.
Yeah?
She's beautiful.
You love her. Everybody does, you know?
And intelligent.
Yeah.
That is very kind
of you. She has a way into your heart, you know? Yeah.
I'm a parasite.
There you go.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. I love this woman.
But welcome to the show, guys. You've been with us for many years, and we're friends and everything. We see each other all the time, and I love to have you back. I wanted you guys to meet Tori, and that's why I thought, you know, it's been a while, Ethan, since you've been on the show.
It has been.
You guys are due back here. So you host a show called Combat Radio. It's on Friday mornings at 10 on Channel 2 here for a couple hours. What do you guys talk about?
It's the prison riot equivalent of radio, I guess. Pretty much anything can go in there and anything can happen, usually bad.
Really?
Really bad. That's an awesome way to say it.
Yeah, well, I wish I knew what we talked about.
He's overstating it. But, okay, from an observer's point of view.
Yeah, let's hear it.
He always has film industry people, mostly,
yeah.
Right?
Well, that's,
You guys both have been in the film industry and everything.
Right.
So you have a lot of friends. And you bring them in and stuff. And always a great collection of people. And
I'm always intimidated by the people getting up in the elevator going on your show because I'm like, damn. Damn.
But you know a lot of people. I mean, you're very involved, right?
Involved in a lot of like things. Involved in like criminal mafia type activity?
Well, there's people. Or? I don't know.
Well, we both, Loda and I both worked in Warner Brothers Studios for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I was on the feature development side. She was in post. So a lot of the, you know, I wish I could claim some awesome bit of radio wizardry. It's not like our show is not a professional show like this show. Our show is kind
yeah.
of
yeah, like really.
Who will pick up my call on the way to the studio and get down there? So yeah, we tend to kind of work
okay,
off
so,
our friends.
And but that's the
way to do it.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about the radio. You sit down with friends mm-hmm. And you talk. You know, like
yeah.
you seldom get to do it in real life. You know, so it's. That's why I like it, you know.
We actually have eye contact for more than like 2 seconds.
Right,
with
exactly.
Else,
you know with
I mean?
No
right.
phones and stuff for a whole hour.
Yeah. Right.
So, Loda, how long were you working for Warner Brothers? When did you start?
I was working for Warner Brothers for 23 years, but I started at MGM 10 years. So I was in the industry for 35 years. I started right out of high school when I was 17.
Really? So you had like the dream to get into the film industry early on?
What's funny is I didn't. My sister had just finished her master's degree and went to the American Film Institute, and she got me a summer job at Paramount Communications. So I worked there, and after I graduated from high school, I went back to apply for that same job, and they said, oh, no, go to MGM. They're hiring in their union, and I just bugged that guy so much that when he got my phone call, he knew my voice.
Whoa.
Oh, Loda.
That's
okay,
the way to do it,
hiring.
Loda. There you go.
Wow.
And that's how
that's
it started.
The way to do it. You know, you got to be persistent. You got to be consistent. And tenacious, right? You got to go after what you want, man.
Well, funny story is this is hilarious how life is like full circle. Ethan had Randall Kleiser on his show from the director of Grease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I worked at Paramount Communications when I was in high school, because I worked 2 summers, they said, oh, this is back when before video, you know, so you had to like repair film and send it out. So they said, oh, the director of Grease needs a copy, so could you repair the 16 millimeter and send it out? So I'm thinking, I'm going to get fired for this, but I sent a note inside the film to Randall Kleiser. Says, I really loved your film, and I just, you know, could you please send me an autograph? And I'm thinking,
good.
I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah,
so weeks later, I get back a picture of Randall Kleiser and John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John sitting on the beach, because actually he was filming Blue Lagoon on the beach because he had a screening out there. And he had him on his show, I think last year, and I called in. I wasn't able to come and talk to him about it, and he remembered doing that.
Wow. That's so badass.
That, huh? Wow.
That's like the 90th time we've heard someone do something ballsy and it works out. So you know what? go balls out. Gotta do it,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. It's not gonna come to you. That's for sure.
That's fantastic.
And Ethan, so you worked in the feature side of Warner Brothers?
Well, I started out in the mailroom actually, but then I ended up working in the.
So that's the classic story: starting in the mailroom. You got to. You got to start at the bottom.
I was actually fired from it, but I was. I was quickly hired, like 2 or 3 days after I was terminated from the mailroom by a producer that worked on The Lot, and he was working on Collateral Damage for Schwarzenegger, so that was actually the first feature I was put on.
Damn.
How cool. You know,
so I worked in the office, the executive side.
That's nice. So you get to meet a lot of cool people and everything.
Yeah, it's been entertaining. I mean, Schwarzenegger was hilarious.
He seems like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because he's very personable, and it's almost
charming.
Kind of misleading. I remember... I volunteered at nights for director John Milius, who did Conan the Barbarian and Red Dawn.
Okay.
And when we were doing Collateral Damage, it was such a disastrous movie. I mean, even Maria Shriver did an uncredited rewrite on it. It was supposed to be a movie for Harrison Ford, and he passed on it.
Oh,
so
really?
Schwarzenegger wanted to do it. He wanted to do it without action. It was going to be like a non-Schwarzenegger film. And I remember I go to John. I go, hey, your boy Conan is here on stage 8 doing reshoots. They had to do $12 million in just reshoots alone on that movie.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, well, let's go see him. You know, so he jumps on my golf cart and I wheel him down there, you know. And it's just interesting. Like, I'm going to take one of my childhood heroes, John Milius, who did all the movies we grew up on, Big Wednesday, you know. I mean, you know, and we're going to go he's going to say hello to the guy he basically discovered, Schwarzenegger. And they talk and they catch up, and John introduces me, although Schwarzenegger had seen me reporting to the set time and again. And Schwarzenegger puts his hand on my shoulders and he goes like, you got good shoulders. But then he points at my gut and goes, but you look like you've been relaxing.
That guy is charming. Yeah. I got to be honest.
Funny, huh?
Hilarious.
That's
and,
so cute.
You know, I mean, I had several conversations since that were all like kind of that tone. And, you know, that was like my first real job. That movie was my first real job. That production company was my first real job.
That's cool. That's cool.
For what it's worth.
So, but you do have the big shoulders and everything, you know? I mean, did you ever play football? I always want to ask you that. Because you got the body of a football player, right? I mean, it's
I want
like
him just to protect me.
But not
all
the contract. The contract of a football player.
I mean, this guy, you know, would crush me in a second.
I just want him to walk
behind
me. If you
were like in the defensive line or something, my God, you know? So I always admire that. You know, how tall are you, Ethan?
About 6'3".
Really?
Yeah, give or
take.
Wow,
yeah.
Depending on how I'm standing up that day.
Yeah, right?
It's been, depending on my evening before, probably, is how big I project myself in defense.
Laura, how long ago did you guys meet? Do you remember?
Yes.
Okay. Well, women always remember.
Yes.
In 2000. Actually, Ethan remembers, like, little things on our date, like what we were wearing. Stuff that
my husband
I don't
that.
Remember. And he's always like, do you remember when you were wearing this and you did this and you did this? And we walked here and I'm like,
Well, obviously paid attention, you know, that's good.
Oh. Everyone was in love with Loda back then. Oh. That was she was a very, very hot commodity at Warner Brothers for those people that were lucky enough to somehow jive their way into her presence.
The reason, Ethan, this I have to tell you this, because as big a guy as he is, this is the sweetest story. We go shopping in this mall in Restoration Hardware, and we're just walking around. So we just started dating, and I'm going around the store and picking up these little things and looking at them like, oh, that's kind of cute. And I get my Christmas stocking, and I owe damn near everything that I picked up.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's, he knows.
So you remember.
I'm Jewish, and I understand that.
And because it was Restoration Hardware, it was all super expensive.
Yeah, it was.
Totally useless.
Totally.
Can't do anything with it.
But every single thing that I
like,
picked
look,
up.
Next time we'll go through,
that
you know,
so
we should have gone through a supermarket.
Yeah, 99 cent store or something.
You
know. That's so funny.
But that's good. That's a good indication your future husband has a good memory.
Attention.
That's good, you know. That's more than I can say for myself with my memory, you know.
No, yeah.
But there you go, you know. So it's a cool thing. And that was very romantic, I guess, to pay attention to these things.
But it is always like an $800 leather screwdriver, isn't it? A Restoration Hard Driver. It's always such a weird, but I love it.
That was, I got to give her credit because that's when I was in the mailroom. And quite frankly, you know, you're pretty invisible at that level at a studio. And, you know, fortunately, I had come from a real job and a real career, and I just needed a break from it. So I ended up getting a union gig at the studio, and it turned out to be in the mailroom. But, you know, I mean, I started off there making $7 an hour.
Wow.
So it was tough to kind of put it together for that first year. They deliberately, I think, make it tough for you.
To weed them out.
Yeah. And so at that point, I mean, I was just barely, but I've got to give her props because I was barely getting by. And at least she saw at least a little something, some spark of potential, because she had her share of suitors.
Her pick,
in fact, you
she?
Were dating a tool at the time. I can't even remember what his name was, but she had some guy, you know, who would remain nameless.
She's all, no comment. I'm James Comey. No comment.
It's funny, still remember. She probably forgot all about it.
No.
So long ago, no?
You know, I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have, you know, people tend to see you where you're at,
yes,
really where you're going.
Amen.
Often.
That's true.
So she gave me a little bit of credit, and I was able to string together some kind of career at some point.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
But you would be surprised. You mean people think, oh, God, mailroom. You know, Joel Cox, Clint Eastwood.
Well,
they all started.
Yeah,
you started there.
Everybody, I started in the mailroom. Yeah, we all start. Everybody starts in the mailroom, and it's not. It's a real mailroom. There's mail and there's a room. It's not just like a saying.
Right. That it's. But it's a foot in the door. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it did pay dividends when I came to start doing radio for you here at LA Talk Radio, because I contacted a lot of those producers, some of which I didn't even know. But I would say in the email, I'd say, look, I used to actually deliver mail to your office. And that got the sympathy trip where a lot of them were like, okay, I can't say no. I'll have to come down to your station and do an interview.
That's good.
But you always use it.
But it's funny, don't you? In the mail room, you guys could had access to everybody. Like even my job, I was in the Editors Guild and I worked in post-production. But I didn't go into the executive offices. There was no reason for me to be there.
That's the reason I was hired over there, actually. Yeah.
So therefore, there was no introduction. There was no, you know.
You really have the most access.
Yeah.
You really have the most. You're the little mouse. I mean, now this metaphor is getting out of hand. But I mean, yeah, you have the most access. Such as I'm getting with a cage and there's doors. It's too much.
Right. I stayed late a lot. Like my shift would end at 5 and I'd sometimes stay as late as 7:30 just going office to office.
Just kind of networking, huh?
Anything I could do, yeah, just getting my face known or just trying to establish the reputation that I was dependable.
See, that's smart to do, man.
These inspirational.
Yeah, let people know you, you know, make yourself known.
And it worked because, I mean, as soon as they got rid of me, I was hired like probably the next Monday.
Because you were indispensable. Monday. So once you make yourself kind of known and indispensable, you got to hire someone like that.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. Wow. Very cool. And you have a beautiful daughter. She grows so fast. When they started, she was a little girl. Now she's a big
teenager.
That's how
human beings work.
That's true, right? But I'm just saying, it's been 9 years, you know.
Wow.
So she's really done a lot of growth.
Wow.
8 or 9 years since we started. I mean, May 19th was the first show. I can't remember if it's...
So that would have been 8 years ago, I think, because you guys came in a year later.
Yeah.
You weren't with us downtown, right?
No.
Okay, so that was like... So you came in...
When you
were like
across
a year
from
old.
The Wine Bistro.
Yeah. That was when we were a year old. That's 8 years
ago. No, it's better that this place has moved.
No, I like the Wine Bistro idea.
No, we would lose guests in there.
Oh, yeah. I would just be there in the morning,
fully
drinking.
How was your St. Patrick's Day? Did you do anything?
I had some green tea, which was like the lamest thing you could do.
What about drinking in a bar? No, no.
You know, I couldn't. The one day you don't want to go to flipping bars on freaking St. Patrick's Day. That's the
worst drive. What did you guys do? Did you go out?
I made corned beef and cabbage at home.
Nice.
And we watched Leprechaun in the Hood.
Against my will.
Leprechaun in the Hood.
Which is, you know, as a...
Sounds fantastic.
...former film executive, it baffles me.
How that was made.
And, you know... And it's got some credible people in it. And that's the thing. I mean, it just goes to show you it's all about the paycheck.
Hey, you know, John Goodman was in Chud, which is for Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers. That was his first role. We've all been in the mailroom. You know what I
job.
Mean?
You need the job.
You need the job.
It's funny. They have sayings in there called the leprechaun said.
Let's not
you let me hear.
Know too much about the movie.
One of them, he goes, iced tea gives him like a joint and he smokes it and he says, oh, this is okay. He goes, no, that's the iced tea. He goes, no, that's the bomb. He goes, the bomb, you say? Takes another puff and he goes, ah, a friend with weed is a friend indeed.
I guess these leprechaun movies are pretty iconic in certain circles, right?
Oh,
there's
five
or six of them.
They're called classics.
And I didn't realize Warwick Davis is the leprechaun.
Oh, yeah, Willow.
So they have like incredible cast. In, you know, and the whole setup, Leprechaun in the Hood, that's on the surface sounds genius.
Yeah, like I would buy that movie as an executive without having to see anything other than the title. Well,
the title is great, right?
You know what I'm saying? That's a great concept movie.
You know, I could see a lot of executives doing the same thing. Unfortunately, there's those executives that are saying, like, well, how's this going to be perceived upstairs?
Yeah, right.
There's
right.
a lot of that. Am I going to be fired? Like, there's movies like Mike Tyson's Mysteries. That's a TV show that I would have been able to buy sight unseen.
Unseen.
You know, basically, Mike Tyson solves mysteries with, like, a mystery Scooby-Doo team and a... You know, man. And it's
yeah,
a real
that's,
show.
I'm done. Yeah, I'm good. That's
and I'm
great.
Like, I don't need to yeah. see it. Or anything yeah. with Sam Jackson. I don't need to see it. It's
yeah,
like,
just
I'm
please.
Good. Whatever.
To be honest, anything with Mike Tyson right now would be very exciting to watch.
He's come full circle.
He really is. And I've read a lot of his books, and he's so forthcoming now. He's so yeah. open that I'm like, wow, this guy's amazing. He's a very yeah. interesting character investment. He's someone that like has a lot of heart, a lot of anxiety, like a lot of mental health issues that he's really opening up about. Mm. But he's also really funny and really yeah. dark. It's great.
Well, yeah. props to the therapist that opened him up.
Yeah.
Because it really worked in his case.
His career had kind of another up. You know, yeah. ever since that punch in Hangover.
Yeah, yeah. Boom, he's boom, made boom, a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, God, that was funny.
You know, he's mellowed out a little bit yeah. in his old age, maybe. You yeah. know, who knows? Who knows?
That face tattoo, I still think he regrets that face tattoo.
Yeah, huh?
That's well, just always oh, well. There.
But the face tattoo reminds me, which I wanted to bring up, an amazing new way of how people create, like, entertainment for us now is... there's a new game called Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon. It's a video game, right?
Yeah.
But what is surprising is on Amazon, they made a 35-minute movie off of that game. And it's actually a teaser for the game. Now I watched this movie, and I'm like, I bought the game. So
wait,
it works.
Wait, you watched the teaser, the 35-minute teaser.
And yeah,
and
I watched the whole thing.
After that, you bought the game.
I bought the game after that.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is a game I might normally buy anyway. But although still. Although I don't really play video games anymore.
Sure.
I mean, I got a PS4 a couple of years ago. I haven't touched it in like
but this
six,
was effective.
6 months.
This was effective.
But this is a cool... Yeah, wow. And the reason I'm bringing it up, because the character, the main villain, has a face tattoo. And he looks... I mean, scary as hell.
Wow. You know, I met Tom Clancy over at Warner Brothers before he passed away.
Wow.
He would never say goodbye to you. He always said, Clancy out.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he would say, you know, Clancy out. And everyone in the production office would always get pissed off because they say that was... It was so derogatory.
That's got to be the worst thing I've ever heard someone say when they leave.
I guess he wasn't in the military, and a lot of guys would be like, this is... So condescending, like this. The commanding officer is the one who says out.
Right.
He tells you they're out.
Oh, is that
so
right?
So when he says out, I guess they would all get pissed off. Like, this Clancy guy's got to go. It's like, I'm sick of Clancy out.
Yeah, you know? Right?
Like, he would just abruptly end the conversation. Clancy right. out.
Even if you were, like, a general and you were just talking with conversation and you said, like, someone out, I'd be like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
What's
you
happening
know?
Here?
Yeah.
So when he died, I put it on social media. I said, Clancy's out.
Yeah, yeah.
Officially.
But now everything that comes out after his death, of course, it's just his name's on it, but he's not really doing anything with it. Even when he was alive, they started this whole series of Ghost Recon and other video games, and they would put his name on it, but he had nothing
really?
To do with it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of like he probably endorsed it or something.
Licensing deal.
But but regardless, I mean, so just the fact that now the way they market, whereas content is being created by advertisers and advertisers... advertisements are created by content creators.
Yep,
so it's amazing. You know, the lines are being blurred now.
You have a reality show host as president. It's all being blurred.
Oh yeah,
it's a pop. No, but really, it's a pop culture mix that's become really. There are no lines anymore. It's 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, well. You know, we can argue about why we've come to this in the first place.
No, right, but I'm saying we don't have to even say why. But it's true. We do have blurred lines in terms of like a lot of...
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah, the artificial
I happen to look more at marketing, but okay, we'll take that.
But it's almost everything I'm saying. No, you're right. I'm sorry. But it's true. It's like it seems like the whole world is a bit more blurred. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's no like... I remember a world where there used to be... it wasn't operating 24 hours a day.
Right.
Remember?
The news, right.
Yeah, I mean, you wanted to get something done. You had to wait till the morning. Now you can do everything at night, you know? Mm-hmm. So the world is constantly moving 24/7. There's no time to rest, you know? So, well, this is cool. So how have you guys managed since then? I mean, so you guys both, like, what, retired from the company? You left. How did things happen for you?
Well, you know, the entertainment business is like it's like the Titanic of all businesses. I mean, it can go down.
Wow.
You know, there's whole studios that go down sometimes.
That's true,
so it's
right?
not exactly the most stable work. And
it's
we do
fickle.
A lot of charity work. So we were never really in a good situation because a lot of what we did do employment-wise, we would funnel back to different community programs or things like that. So it's always been an interesting time, to say the least.
Yeah.
For us, career-wise.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is that they're so involved in so many different things. And let's talk about some of the things you guys are involved in, because they're really, I mean, I've never seen so much, altruism.
Yeah, civic duty, almost.
Altruism is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Being able to step outside of yourself to see and then help other people, you know. And you guys, I admire you for this. You do the yearly Christmas
Breakfast with Santa.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that actually started with my daughter, to be honest. Well, when Loda and I first dated, she every Christmas would adopt families and like get Christmas lists and get the presents and the Christmas dinner for them. And the first year we were together, I helped with that, and it was like, I actually thought it was a job. I'm like, now I got to go to Target and get all this shit. You know, I was like,
I know, but it feels like it, right?
It wasn't until we delivered it that I realized why you do it. It's
right.
funny. It seems like a shopping list. And then you realize, you know, there's something that happens there in the process of giving that is kind of enlightening that I was naive to. And you walk away going, well, we only adopted 4 or 5 families. We could have probably done 10.
Wow.
You know, and then... Yeah. And then you start to build on it because you get this weird sort of, you know, like addiction of it's hard to explain. To those people who never do charity work, they'll never get it. But those people that do kind of understand what
it's
I'm saying.
It's a high. It's like almost like a high.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you see, it's like, because I can imagine when you bring those gifts to the kids that can't really afford it, it's like magic, you know?
Yeah. Or... They can't afford it. Yeah. I'll tell you. Yeah. You should talk to my mortgage company. But and then a few years after that, my daughter, when she was in third grade, her best friend across the street lost her house. It was foreclosed on in that crisis. And that was a concept that was mind-numbing to her. You know, how does someone get thrown out of the house that they perceive to be their own, not understanding how banking works, right?
Right.
So she came in. I mean, we watched her friend pack up. And I said, you know, they're probably getting ready to go. It's probably the last trip. Why don't I walk you over and you can say goodbye? And I did. And my daughter, without any props from me, knocked on the door. Her little friend happened to answer. And my daughter said, you know, if you don't have any place to live, you know, you can live at my house.
You know? I love children.
And, you know, the way she said it was so shy and so innocent. I was just standing there watching. And her friend goes, well, no, we're going to move in with my aunts, but I'll see you at school. I'm still going to be at school. And so I walked my daughter back across the street, and it's, you know, it's emotional to think about even now. And she just grabbed her heart like someone had punched her, and she just let out this cry like she was just so devastated. And I didn't really know what to do except, you know, just kind of be there and sit with her. And, you know, about 20-30 minutes after that, she comes in to my office at home and goes, I know what I want to do. I want to give homes to people for Christmas. Christmas is coming up. And I'm like, well, we're already like in November. I'm like, I don't know if we can do that, but we can probably do Christmas for people who have no homes. And so that's how our event started. Every December, we do an annual Christmas event for homeless kids. We bus in Polar Express style, about 400 of them, for presents, brunch. We have all the celebrities from the show co-host it. We get together and do a big thing, and we bring in all the characters from Disney and Star Wars, and
and all these people show up, you know.
Yeah, it is crazy.
And the firefighters and everything. I mean, it was amazing.
That's,
you know,
such
and,
a wonderful
and and kids, all they have to do is show up, you know. And so,
and they'll remember
amazing.
That the whole year they have something to look
right.
forward
and
to.
It keeps you guys busy for a long time too, I can imagine. It's putting together something like
it's a year-long job. I mean, Santa's literally booked like the day the event ends for the following year. I mean, the thing about it is it's not so much about the holiday of Christmas is it's just letting these kids know they matter, right? It's like it could be any holiday. And people have been very gracious about getting involved. We had Tom Kenny in it last year, who was SpongeBob. We had the cast of the Avengers with us.
Wow.
And, you know, those are things like those kids. A lot of the kids in homeless communities or social services actually still go to a structured school. And they have vouchered housing somewhere, or they live in their cars or in a cardboard box. But they still, in most cases, will report to a school where everyone knows they're the homeless kid. But so, of course, they all go to the school and tell these stories that sound untrue about the event. But, you know, I have to give credit to my mom, too, because when I was a kid, she would always take us to those kind of things. like a Christmas event, breakfast with Santa or stuff, and never for charity. But those things you kind of remember. And I remember thinking, like, well, that was always a pretty cool thing for me. I mean, I bet these kids would appreciate it. And now it's just this monstrous event. And, you know, the funny thing is I can't, and I don't mean to railroad the program with all this, but.
No, it's fantastic.
I remember, like, I can't believe we pulled it off. I still can't believe we pulled it off. I mean, the first year, I remember I went to my local Mexican cantina because I figured, well, they know me in here, so they'll let me do it here. Mm-hmm. And I said, can we do your brunch on Saturday? I'll pay for 400 kids and a fixed plate cost, and we're done before you open. And I want to do Christmas and a Santa Claus, something very basic. And then he goes, yeah, yeah, no problem. And that was like in August or September. And good to go all through September, October, November. And then like right before Thanksgiving, he goes, well, the owner wants another $4,000.
Oh, my God.
And in addition to what we agreed to.
Oh, my God.
And this is only like a backdrop to the story. And I was like, God, you know, I don't have it, even if I had. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'm... That's like extortion, basically. But I just, even if the money doesn't exist, it's not there. And so they said, well, if you don't have it, then we're canceling your event, and you can't do it here. And the event is literally like a week and a half later.
Oh, my God.
It's like
what is the Grinch? What is this place?
Yeah. It's like set for like the first weekend of December. So I left, and I went to every single restaurant in my city. Every restaurant. And they all said no. Most of them said, well, talk to our managers or our corporate office, get back to you, and never did. And I went into one place, which is the place that was perfect for it all along. It's like a North Pole kind of ski lodge and a place I wanted to do it at but never thought they would do it because it's in the soccer mom part of town.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I go, I walk in and I go, hey, I want to do a Christmas event here for 400 kids and bring in some presents and stuff. And I could just hear myself fatigued and sounding really crazy to the guy. And he was the one guy, Greg Amsler at Salt Creek Grill, goes, yeah, we can do that. That sounds great. We would love to be a part of something like that.
Wow.
And we put it together.
So you got to go through a lot of no's to get a yes.
Oh, it was no everywhere.
Wow. That's my life.
You have to understand.
I mean, if my life depended on it, I wouldn't have done it. Then you went and did this with every restaurant. You know, you didn't care. I mean, look at that at the drive. You know what I'm saying? To help. You know what I'm saying?
You know how, like, because the things put you in the right place at the right time. We got in front of the guy who is the Santa for the Boys and Girls Club every year.
It turns out
the guy who's on the board for the pediatric.
Oh, my God. You got the one person that would say yes.
Right.
Yes, that does everything in the community.
And I can tell you, I mean, part of it was I really wanted to slam dunk that Mexican place. Like, I was determined to figure out a way to make it work because I wanted to get back to them that we succeeded despite them trying to extort us.
Yeah.
But I went in everywhere. And I can cite all the places, Claim Jumper, Lazy Dog. I mean, I went in everywhere, and they were like, oh, no, we don't really want to get into that. There's no – on the surface, you get a lot of pats on the back.
Oh, it's great. You get a lot of good job.
But internally, there's not a lot of people jumping up to help you.
Sure.
They want to act like they are, but they don't really do it.
So what was the company, the restaurant that did?
Salt Creek did it in Valencia.
Right,
and they've done it. And, you know, here's the thing. Now it's a huge event. And every year somebody, some company comes up and says, why don't you expand this? And you can do it at our place or at our restaurant chain. And I always say the same thing. I said, I can never take it out of here.
Yeah.
And until they're done with us. They're the only people that said yes. It's got to stay here for the next 20 years.
That's so loyal.
You know? You got to be. You know, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to kind of expand your charity work or diversify a little bit. But you have to remember who, you know, helped you make it. Hence the reason I'm still at LA Talk Radio 9 years later.
There you go. And besides, you know, you guys have a secure place in heaven anyway.
Yeah, your halos are out of control.
Exactly.
Can't see
it. Well, forget Loda about anything else. You know?
I'm still balancing karmic scales for many, many years of craziness prior to being a family man that I still have to work. I
mean,
I always wonder when I watch Scrooge and that Bob Marley shows are Bob Marley. You know, the Rastafarian. You know, he's got all those chains, and I'm like, God, I wonder what my chains look like. I'm hoping, you know, I see that. Like, anyway.
No, I don't think so. Not since I've known you. So whatever you did, I think you've made up for it more than enough.
That's incredible.
Know? So this is cool now. So you guys met at Warner's while you were together. Yeah. Laura, how did it happen? I mean, did he, like, make a move?
This one comes in. He always used to wear these, like, dark glasses. And, oh, my God, Ethan... like talking about bodybuilder, you know, he just lean in these big shoulders and like trying to pick up stuff, and he had looked down underneath his sunglasses and he had this big beautiful smile, and he just kept coming, and he invited me to different things,
and she blew it off.
Really?
It was really, I really actually thought she's not interested.
What a persistent man he is.
This guy, I know.
Can you give me some lessons, man? Because I hear one no.
What?
You know, I don't even have to hear a no. If I don't hear a yes, I'm out of there.
If you even see a blink before a yes, you're like, no, she meant no.
Exactly, yeah, she meant no, I'm out of here. But look at you, you're so optimistic, you know?
I honestly didn't think anything was ever going to happen. She seemed like she was dating somebody, and for many of us, could not figure it out. But
wow, this is a team discussion. I love it.
It was like she was dating somebody, and I just thought she wasn't interested. And it seemed like that way for months and months and months. I don't know.
So she was dating someone. I mean, you were persistent. Yeah. Whoa, were you persistent?
Well, at some point, you got
to
trade up.
But he got through to you somehow.
Well, the person I was dating, we broke up. And then I was off the dating.
Yeah, she's
the whole thing, you're like, okay, we're
cut your hair and I'm not dating. Yep.
I heard that from her a lot.
Yeah. I'm not dating for a year. And he was like not giving up.
And I was like, who wants to date anyway? I mean, seriously. It's just this weird vocabulary word people apply to situations.
You should be a lawyer, man. That sounds just like a lawyer.
But Ethan, I mean, that's a great strength you have, you know, and quality in you is the ability like not to take no for an answer.
It's a bulldog,
you know?
It's what you need.
I mean, you know, you can accomplish so much and you already have, you know, but I mean, you have this quality that many people do not, you know. And I mean, I'm not. Look, my aunt told me yesterday, I was fixing their computer.
Yeah.
And she's visiting from Israel. And she says, you know what? She says, you never give up, you know. And like in doing things that don't work out, I won't give up until I fucking do it, you know.
Right.
So with the computer yesterday, her son's already given up. I'm like, relax, I'll do this, right? And I used to be the one with no patience.
That's right.
But you learn.
Look how much you've grown, Sam.
Yeah, you know, you learn. But the thing is, I don't have the persistence to go after something if I don't see reciprocal interest, you know. And I know I'm losing out on a lot of things, women that I'm interested in, you know, things that I want to be part of.
What do you think the worst thing that could happen if you went after someone?
I know,
I hear
that.
What do you picture?
I hear that all the time.
The worst thing. Like, what is your worst fear? That she would laugh or...
No. That I would just... That it would confirm my fears.
I see.
That I'm no good.
That's usually not what it is.
But those are fears. I mean, I don't usually feel like that.
Right, that's subconscious.
But it brings it back up because I've had it from such a young age. I mean, I remember myself being 15 years old, being in love with this chick that didn't even know I existed in another school. But I really, but I never made a move.
I think a lot of people have stories like that.
Right?
Yeah, you're not...
I know.
A lot of people have stories like that.
I know, but they overcome that, and I'm stuck at 15.
But that story you bring up within the hair breadth of a second, I mean, that's very vivid for you. So that memory for you is like, you realize you never even let her know that you were even had a boner for her.
Exactly. I just felt like if she's not noticing me and coming to me, then she's not interested. But isn't that so freaking crazy to think that?
I think it's much more likely that the reality is she was looking at you going, when is this guy going to say something?
Right? That's why he missed it out.
I know.
Tired.
Many times I think it happens.
This guy's so good looking and he's not making a move. And my parents say I can't ask him because we're restricted by this stupid society thing. But this guy's not.
But he's not making a move. Maybe he's not interested, right?
But see, that's the lesson. And like nowadays when we talk about dating on the show, you're always like, well, I don't know. She never says anything like I'm interested. And I think it's stemming back to this 15-year-old.
It is. I'm telling you.
So good to know.
To me, people, I know. I want to be direct. Like to me, if you're interested in a long-term relationship, great. And you're interested in getting together and hitting it, tell me that.
Yeah.
But tell me the truth.
Give me some information.
Exactly. You know. But totally. I just had this. I don't think I ever had. It's funny because I had. I didn't have a mentor per se, but I had an older cousin. So he was like, he was 2 years older than me, and I learned a lot of things from him. Some not so great, okay?
Yeah.
But the fact remained that he wasn't a good example for how to pick up women, let's say, okay? It was a different time. In Israel. So now that I've lived here and everything, it's sort of like I never really learned how to pick up a woman.
Wow.
I don't have a game.
There's
you
don't have game. You don't have the cultural references. No, you don't have the lingo. You don't have the rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, because because all the relationships I had were either women that made it clear or they made a move.
So it was very direct for you to know.
Yeah, you know, or like online or something, you know. But it was never, I don't remember ever going to a bar or a club or something, meeting somebody and then having a relationship with her.
I got to be honest, I don't know about you, but if I'm at a bar, very few people have picked me up that I've ever had
but
a
let's
long-term
say bar.
Relationship.
Okay, so let's say a restaurant or something. Okay. You go to a restaurant, you see someone you like. I never walk over to anybody, but just think about how many opportunities I'm missing out on.
Sure.
You see, now Ethan, if he saw somebody,
he would
bam. And you know what? A lot of couples also, I hear, how did you guys meet? Well, he saw me at the restaurant and he came and said hi or sent me a note or whatever, you know?
There was indication. Yeah. What if you, when you're dating someone
I hate rejection so much that I'll sacrifice all the great things that are possible
for me. To never get that feeling.
Right.
So what if you just start off dating, the very first conversation you say, I'm like, I was from Israel, I don't have like the normal game, let me know really clearly if you're interested, you know what I mean? What if you said that the truth?
To me, that honesty would be so sexy.
But wait a minute, I've lived here 40 years, I can't use that excuse.
You
know what, my adulthood I've done here.
You are in a great town to solve all your problems. It doesn't get, I think, much better than Los Angeles.
Really? Yeah, I mean, as far as selection is.
As far as places you can go and things you can, you know,
that's
opportunities
true.
And things you can.
But I got to tell you, every time that I do go out, I meet people and I make connections,
right.
You know? I mean, I came to your show and we got two beautiful women coming in here, funny, and, you
show?
Know, so it always.
My comedy, I do
stand-up.
Oh,
she does a comedy show.
Perfect.
She's a stand-up, so we're going to see you at the Flappers Sunday. And
great girls that I also didn't know. Now we're on Facebook, we're talking about sketches. Yeah. But that's why, like, and it's easier as like an actor, an improv person, as a comic. I know I can go into any situation in an elevator, let's say, 3 seconds, and I'll make you laugh and enjoy it, and we can probably meet. But for someone who's so fearful of the rejection, I think you should say that straight out. I think that is sexy as hell. If you're like,
but you know what? The thing is, though, I'm able to start a conversation anywhere, including an elevator, except if it's a really hot chick. Well, there's sexual tension, you know? And sometimes I feel that, so I don't know.
But if you just straight out said, hey, I know this is really awkward and I feel uncomfortable, but
I think you're just beautiful
and I just want to talk to you. That to me
really? So much
is
better.
The entrance, because I'm saying it's honest.
Absolutely.
It's flattering.
Totally.
Why would that be
intimidating?
Okay, well, coming from a woman or two women, I'll go
Sam,
for that.
I'm saying, what if you were super honest? Instead of, if you gave me a pickup line, I would be eye-rolling into my vagina.
Right.
I'd be like, no. But if you said, hey, I'm so sorry, I just want to let you know, I think you're just beautiful. That is a way to have a great conversation opener.
Wow. Because it sounds like, it sounds like a line, you know? I don't know.
No,
it seems like everybody says
I say that to women, because I'm one of those women who thinks that
because there's no sexual tension, so women can say that to each other.
Because I'm saying is, if I, because women are so, to me, competitive and so stupid. It's like this whole lost sisterhood that if I see a woman who's beautiful, I will go up to her and say, oh, you look beautiful, or oh my god, I love your dress, or whatever, because we need to do that. Stop being like,
that's my bathroom rule. When I get drunk and I go into the bathroom,
you're a very likable guy.
Thank you.
It's just a matter of making it translate.
I know. That's the thing.
It's the communication.
With yourself.
It's having the confidence with beautiful women. That's
or,
all I'm saying.
But Sam,
that I
what
don't
if it's
know.
Not the confidence, but saying honestly, I don't have the, like, being honest about, hey, I'm kind of shy, but I just want to. What if you're honest about not having that much confidence?
Right. I guess,
that's a different way of looking at it,
that's
you know?
That's true, because then the rejection is not as painful, right?
You
if
know,
it happens,
Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, I guess not.
Just start it off with, before you make a mistake and say no.
Right.
You know.
Oh, I love that one. I love that one.
I want you to know you're the most beautiful woman on the planet.
Yeah, but you have all that confidence. That's right. If someone said that without confidence, I'd be like, what is going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah,
to me, the whole thing is
honesty.
The honesty.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whether you have it or you don't have the confidence, whatever, it's the honesty. Like, the key walks up and says, oh, I'm kind of shy, blah, blah, blah. I'd be like,
yeah, you are
I've
straight
done
up
that
lying.
Too.
You're straight up lying.
Yeah, I need help with my shyness.
I would laugh in your face.
Tells me I should talk to more people. And that's great, though. You should just go, my therapist wants me to get rejected a few times a day to overcome it.
That is ridiculous.
So if he said that, I'd be like, yeah.
I'm gonna step out. Yeah. But if he came up and was like, date me, I'd be like, now I like that kind of a guy. Yeah. So just use
guys, we're totally out of time. We only have 1 hour, not like you, Ethan. Ethan has to.
This is a fun show to do.
Awesome. Yes. Well, so is yours. Listen to Ethan's show, Combat Radio. It's nothing about combat. You know, you gotta. Yeah.
I'm a Buddhist.
And yeah, we forgot to ask you about the name, but that's for next time. Yeah. Listen to the show Combat Radio Fridays at 10 to 12. It's right here. And if you can't catch it live because you're listening to me, then you can catch it on archives, of course, or catch it from 11 to 12. Loda, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Always a lot of fun and lovable. Great couple. How can people get a hold of you real quick if people want to find you?
I'm not on social media much. Not at all. On Twitter. You can find me. I'm on
Twitter.
You're
there all the time. I see
at Combat Radio.
Yeah.
And I'm on Twitter on Modern Mom 101.
Oh, I
sounds
that.
Good. There you go. Indeed, Modern Mom 101. All right.
Get us here.
Yeah, yes. There you go. Well, you're welcome back anytime. Tori, thank you as always.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.